There's probably not a new mom around that hasn't heard the term postpartum depression. The CDC says 1 in 8 women experience symptoms of postpartum depression. But in truth, that is the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more that could be going on. There's anxiety, OCD, and then just overall issues with adjusting to this new and exciting but truly overwhelming world. Let's add to that a global pandemic. On this episode of All Good in the Motherhood, we talk to the brilliant reproductive psychiatrist, Catherine Berndorf. She's co-founder and medical director of the Motherhood Center. We talk about this unusual time, what she is seeing from new moms who are currently locked down during the COVID outbreak, and she has some great advice for new parents, and really all parents, struggling to figure out why their world seems flipped upside down. Spoiler, it has. This is All Good in the Motherhood with Teresa Priolo.
Because as I think about the fact that it's maternal health awareness month, as I think about the fact that this is around the time, I mean, I gave birth 2 years ago in February. So I think this was around the time where I started to really consider what going back to work would look like for me. And that brought up a whole host of anxiety for me. Who would I be when I go back to the office? Am I the same person that left? And so I started to think, I wonder what other moms are experiencing right now. What's nice, I think, is that people are talking about maternal health now in a way that they didn't 10 years ago, or they even didn't 5 years ago. But it still has some sort of a taboo nature to it. And I can't put my finger on why that is.
Well, when you do, please call me emergently and let me know. Because yeah, when I started in this field about 20 years ago, I've always been interested in this, you know, since I was a resident, since, you know, my undergraduate years and some of the stuff I was into, but particularly in medical school, I couldn't decide between being an OBGYN and a psychiatrist. And I ended up just focusing at that interface, right? But from the psychological angle. And I'll tell you, when I first started, nobody was talking about anything. I would go and knock on the doors in the OB department and say, hey, I'm a psychiatry resident and I'd love to talk to your moms. Do you have any with postpartum depression? And they looked at me like I was like, don't say that word out loud. What are you talking about? I don't, goodbye. And it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that there was sort of this general feeling of like, you know, I felt like the Grim Reaper. I don't quite know how to say it. If I said it, then it made it real somehow. Yeah, that women experience a variety of things, right? I had just had my own kid in residency, my first kid. And, you know, it wasn't easy. It was easier to go back to work than it was to stay at home. And I thought, like, I'm not alone here. But trying to talk about it, and this was in 1998, nobody really wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult. And it was a burgeoning field. The field that I'm part of, reproductive psychiatry or perinatal psychiatry, was just getting started. And there was a lot of grassroots movements going towards, like, on the patient advocacy side, you know, because women had killed themselves. They had hurt their children, right? So there was all sorts of stuff brewing. And in some ways, that's the taboo where, you know, when things get really extreme for women, I think, and, you know, you think of Andrea Yates, you know, who drowned her 5 kids in 2001. And people think, well, if that's postpartum depression, I'm never going to speak of it because I don't want anyone to think I'm like that. Right. But she didn't have postpartum depression. She had postpartum psychosis. And there's so much misunderstanding.
Yeah. That brings me to a point when I was postpartum, or in the postpartum period, I should say, people kept asking me if I had thoughts of harming my child.
Yep.
And I kept saying, no, I don't want to harm my child. I mean, I want to bash my own head into a wall, but no, I don't want anything to happen to this little being. And it wasn't until I was out of that time that I thought, what a silly, maybe it's not silly. I know it's asked for a reason, but right. my approach as a mom was like, what a silly question. The problem isn't the kid. The problem is me. Right. I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I don't want anything to happen to this little guy. And I do feel like it's a bit of a misconception, because when I talk to moms who went through the process with me and are maybe now having their second babies, because they never thought that they wanted to hurt their child,
They don't identify.
Right. And then people, my mom was a pediatric ICU nurse for many years. She has 4 kids of her own. And she would always talk about the baby blues. And I thought, well, I thought also that's a bit of a misnomer and a bit misleading because I've never done this before. So I don't know blue from red from anything else. It's right. just all right. confusing.
Right.
So I think a lot of moms are in that same boat where they're, you feel so turned upside down that you truly don't know top from bottom anymore.
Well, it's a you're saying it so well, and it's a problem with nomenclature in the field, period. We don't call what it is the right thing or an identifiable thing that people can say, oh, that's me. So it's very confusing. And the most horrific cases, the most tragic cases get sensationalized, and then people shy away from it even more. But they don't know how to call what they have, right? So there, people now, like back then, no one really even could say postpartum depression. Then we started saying postpartum depression. And what happened was it left out the women who were pregnant and anxious. Well, I'm not postpartum and I'm not depressed. And by the way, many women who have postpartum depression don't seem, feel, or look depressed. So right there, you've got another misnomer. There's so much confusion. And I do want to go back to your to what you said. You know, I always ask people, do you ever feel like you would want to hurt the baby or that harm could come to the baby in some way despite how much you love the baby, right? It's a very nuanced, complicated question because really what we're trying to get at is, are you feeling so dire and desperate that you don't care if you're alive? You love the baby probably or maybe, and you don't want to hurt the baby, but you're having intrusive, violent thoughts that harm will come to the baby. Like every time you walk by the window, you grab the baby even tighter because you think, I could throw the baby out the window. Not that you want to do that, but 30 to 40% of women will have thoughts like that and they have no postpartum anything. Like you can be walking in front of the bus with a stroller and think, oh my God, the bus is gonna run over my kid. That's an intrusive, violent thought.
Wow, wait, and that is not necessarily a full-blown indication.
No.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
No. Women have that all.
That's normal, quote-unquote, air quotes, normal.
Normal, right? I mean, look, you're a new mom, and your level of anxiety should be a little bit elevated because, for Darwinian reasons, right, we have to protect this helpless being, right? This there's no kid without a mother. I'm not the first to say that. There's no baby. There's a better way to say it by someone more famous than I. You know, but the point is that Darwin, I mean, and when you think about it physiologically, we are programmed to protect. So we are on high alert. There's our vigilance is, you know, our vigilance level is elevated. We are scanning for problems. We are on, you know, adrenaline is flowing so that we can make sure this new little creature for whom we are entirely responsible for is going to be okay. And that's like a new state of being that comes with some, you know, thoughts that are not that wanted, like something terrible could happen.
So then where is the line? Where is the line between normal and I don't want to use the word abnormal, but where is the line between you are just like everybody else and maybe you need a little bit more intervention?
Okay. So there are many ways to call that. Like you could say distress and disorder. You could say, you know, normal, abnormal. You could say non-pathologic, pathologic. But there are a lot of ways to think about what that line is. But everyone asks, and it's a really good question because it really has to do with two things. This is how we define psychiatric disorders and psychiatric illness, right? It's defined by a constellation of symptoms, which we all can relate to, but it's sort of, what is the level of distress? Like how bad is it? How much are you thinking about it? How much time and energy and of your life is it taking, right? So what is the level of distress and how dysfunctional is it making you? How much is it impacting your life that is making it hard for you to do your job, be the mom that you want to be, go to school, go to work, do the normal things that you typically do, right? So distress and dysfunction, that helps to define the line. Once you identify the symptoms that you're having. We all have anxious symptoms. We all have depressive moments. We all, you know, you'll have a day where you're down and out and you're like, why do I feel this way? But you probably feel okay the next day. Now, to define depression, it's more days than not in a 2-week period that you have a certain number of symptoms. But that's more technical. And so what I'd really say is just, you know, we kind of know what our baseline is. Like I always say to patients, where do you, quote, live? What's your baseline? There's kind of like not too high, not too low. I always like use a pen and I'll say, here's the like baseline level. Are you someone that's like bored on the sunny side of the street and you've always been, your baseline is a little above that? Are you someone who's kind of always like, a little Eeyore-ish, you live just slightly below the line, right? I'm trying to help people define what their quote normal is. And then you want to see what the flux is, what the difference is between that and where they are when they're sitting in my office.
And then we have something like a pandemic that comes along. Yeah. And it's so important for me to talk to you now because I do think of all of the moms and new moms that are sitting at home who have already been thrown into this sort of like level of upheaval because they have a new kid, right? They have a new baby, they're a new mom. And then the world shuts down. And so not only do you fear not being able to get to and be around your support system, but you're probably also fearing the possibility of you, an immediate member of your family, including perhaps your child, getting sick. So are you guys seeing a lot more people call the center, reach out for help, or just sort of under a constant state of duress now that we're in this really insane period of time?
Becoming a mom, or, you know, a new parent, brings with it, it's a whole, like, you're no longer just you, yourself, and going through the world. Like, you have another being for whom you are entirely responsible for. So I sort of define it as like a, you know, you used to have like a one lane road in your head, and then you maybe picked up a partner and now you've got somebody else to think about, but really you're still mostly worrying about yourself because they're an adult, they can take care of themselves. Now you bring a kid in, you add more lanes on your highway, and you are in a permanent state of multitasking and always thinking of the other. It's like, you know, I always know where my kids are. I mean, or at least I think I do. Now that they're teenagers and beyond. But it's always on my mind. I'm at work. They're in the back of my mind. I'm at the grocery. Wherever I am, they're with me. And that is a state that is, you cannot explain until it happens to you. And it is very, it affects people differently. But you're never alone again.
Yeah, it's a little bit unnerving. I think for a lot of new moms, or not even new, but first time moms, because your thoughts. And I don't think I'm alone in this. Like, I used to have quiet thoughts. Like, no. The brain used to go dormant.
Yes. No. There's no rest and no you know downtime. It's very different. But that wasn't your question. So your question.
But it does speak to what's happening now, yeah. Sort of in this really odd, strange global pandemic. You know, I would think if you had issues before this, they probably are heightened. And if you didn't have issues, I bet you this gave you a few.
Right. Well, I think all of us have had to really think about, I mean, sometimes it's just right in your face, how you feel. Like we're spilling over. Even those of us who didn't used to, we're having to face a global health crisis that could affect any of us and those we love. And it has. So we're all on new territory, right? We're all on new ground. This is not terra firma yet. We don't even really know what's going on. And it's changing, right? It's changing. The landscape continues to change. And I don't think that's going to stop. So we all have to adjust to a new normal that I think has taken and this is a broad statement, but the global level of anxiety and just ticked it up a little for most people. Interestingly, some of my patients who are very anxious, particularly those who have struggled with OCD or have always worried about terrible things happening, they are not more anxious right now. It's so interesting.
That's so interesting. Why is that? How is that?
They are sort of like, hey, I always thought this was going to happen. There's a sense of like relief that comes with the world rising to their level. Like they feel more normal. It's like, yeah, now everybody's washing their hands all the time like me. Now everybody's, you know, worried about germs and contamination and making sure X, Y, or Z. And they're like, yeah, I feel kind of like validated. So it's been a very interesting, you would think people like that might get really, really anxious, but instead there's a, it's been described to me, there is a level of calm that comes with a certain kind of anxiety because the feeling is the world has risen to their level.
Did that come out of left field for you? Because if someone said that to me, I would be like, what in God's name? What? Until I stopped and thought about it a little bit.
Right, right? Probably the first or second person who came my way who I was like, are you okay? How's it going? And they were like, weirdly, I'm okay. And then it just kept happening. And I was like, here we have a very, this is a phenomenon that's happening. Now, on the other hand, there are plenty of people who cannot rest, who are anxious, cannot calm down, who feel, you know, that their sense of anxiety is either heightened or it's new and they are not managing well. And when you have a new baby, you are, it's just that much scarier. And I think for a while there was perhaps a false sense of relief that, you know, babies weren't affected and that there wasn't vertical transmission, that mothers were not transmitting this to their fetuses and thus their babies. And, you know, there's a lot to say on that. And I could talk about that, but, you know, we just don't know that much. You know, we're talking about very, you know, very little data. So it's all scary. And I can't imagine that somebody who's pregnant or having a new baby right now isn't worried. That said, we all can adjust. We're all, we adapt. That's us, the human species, right? We adapt or we don't make it. So I think that we are adjusting to this new level of living in a pandemic. And the women I've seen who are pregnant and postpartum or who have delivered during that 6-day period in New York City when partners weren't allowed in the room and they were on their own, I am telling you, these are warriors. They are warrior women who have resilience beyond which they never knew. Like, we can all do this and we will get through this and this too shall pass, but it sounds super scary. Except I do believe when you're in it and you're forced to face it and go through it, what I am seeing is that most pregnant and postpartum women are doing okay and having the usual, you know, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders in a pandemic, but it's not so significantly worse than you might think.
Yeah, so that brings up a good point. You mentioned the warrior mentality, and I am a very big believer that when a woman, and now that I'm a mom, when a mom puts her mind to something, just forget it. Just, you know what, don't even try to test her. Just get out of the way and let her do what she wants to do. It'll save everybody a lot of headache and heartache in the end.
Correct.
But I also do recognize that when it comes to postpartum disorders, it's not a matter of just switching your mindset.
That's right.
So it's not like, be happy today and just say happy thoughts, right? There really is a chemical component to all this. However, in this time frame, are you advising or are you talking to moms about the importance of shifting your mindset, the importance of recognizing that this is a finite period of time, hopefully, or that, as you said, this too will pass? Is that something that is coming into play more now than maybe it would in pre-COVID times?
I would say generally yes, but that really isn't my experience. What I'm finding is that women, like you said, just tell them they have a hurdle to jump and they will figure out how to jump it. It's like, I feel like, and I see, you know, I have a very self-selecting population in this way, to answer your question. People are managing this. I mean, they're more anxious, they're more tired, but not necessarily to disorder, right? Like, I guess what I mean is I don't know if we can really say it. I'm going to guess no, that the incidence of these disorders, PMADs, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, as we call them, I don't know that the incidence has gone up. It may be that the trigger, we have a big trigger right now, right? The pandemic may functionally be a trigger, like moving or other environmental, you know, a new baby or getting married. Even good stressors are triggering, right? They trigger the system. They cause stress. Even if it's a good kind of happy, you can still be very stressed from it. So it's a trigger. I don't know that it is making it worse. I think where it is, biologically speaking, right? These are medical disorders we're talking about. I don't know that the pandemic is increasing the incidence of these medical disorders. It may be triggering them. We may see more of them now because it's another stressor that is very, very common right now. But again, I don't know that the incidence, you know, overall is really rising. What I would say is, like, first trimester pregnancy or the fourth trimester after you have a baby, there are confusing signs and symptoms, things that you experience. And I put the pandemic in there. It's almost like we're all on maternity leave now, right? We're not sleeping that well. There's an increased sense of isolation, eating, you know, maybe off, appetite, maybe up, maybe down. So there are all these confusing symptoms that can overlap and look alike. And it makes it hard to discern, like, you know, that's why when women will go, you know, in first trimester, and maybe they actually are depressed or anxious or struggling in some way, they'll go and the OB may, well-meaning, but say to them, oh, that's just the first trimester, when in fact there are symptoms brewing, psychological symptoms. And that also happens in the postpartum. You go to your whatever doctor and they're like, you just had a baby. Of course you're tired and you're not eating that well and you can't concentrate and, you know, you have no energy. Those are also the four signs of depression, right? So it's complicated. So how do you discern that? I assume you'll ask next. is that things like feeling hopeless, feeling helpless, feeling like it's never going to get better, that you're not forward looking, right? You can't think about anything enjoyable, much enjoyable in the future, or even in the present. There's something called anhedonia, this sense of kind of joylessness in things that used to bring you joy. And again, often the baby and your feelings about the baby are spared. So people say, well, I love my baby, but like my baby will be fine without me, right? Like, I just want to escape. I don't know why I did this. I'm not the same. I'm trapped. It's never going to get better. I don't see a way out, and my baby will be fine. My partner is competent, you know, and that's when we're getting into trouble.
That's heartbreaking.
It really is. It really is. And that's not to say ambivalence isn't, quote, normal. Ambivalence is normal. You can love and hate at the same time. You can be happy and sad at the same time. So that's not abnormal. That's actually being able to be in the gray. It's not one way or the other. It's both and. It's not either or. It's both and, as we like to say in the field. So you can feel upset that your life has changed so completely, and be furious about it, and love your baby and love the idea of your new life and know that one day you're going to really figure out how to do that, right? Both exist at the same time, and people get confused and don't admit to, and this may contribute to the problem and the stigma. If you admit to the difficulty or the ambivalence about being, oh, some days I love this, some days I hate this, you know, then somehow you're a bad mother. No, you're a normal mother. That is a typical mother. And when you don't admit it, or all we see on Instagram, Facebook is like, you know, fake book, right? It's just like, put your dressed up best self out there. That's not real. I mean, it might be real in a moment, but that's not how it is. And it's very difficult for other women who aren't feeling that way, who look at that and think, oh, that's the norm. I'm off.
Yeah, I see that. And I hear that. And you know, I often think about my husband. I talk about all the time. Like, we look at pictures of our son when he was just a few months old, and we think, "Yeah, we remember that," but yeah. We can't really. I mean, it is tough to bring your best self back to that moment when you know how good things are. You know, and it was wonderful when he was an infant. We were able to find joy in that. But I am the first one to tell anybody, a new mom that asks, I think the beginning sucks, and I'm okay saying that. I'm not a good newborn mom. I'm just not that girl. I can get through it. I did. I'm a good toddler mom. I'm good when they have energy and they're running around and we need to find something to do and we're going to make homemade sand and you know, and he's dirty and jumping in puddles and potty training. I'm good with that. I'm not good with the constant sleep deprivation, the breastfeeding, the everything. I did it all, but it's not my forte. It's just, I'm not good at it. And when I look at pictures of my son now, I think, I wish I really knew how good it was going to get. I wish then I could see into the future and look and go, this is about to get so darn fun. You have no idea. Just put in the work now.
Even then, it might not change that moment, right? You might have to just kind of radically accept that it is hard for that period of time for you, because it will get better. But you can hold that at the same time as the moment being hard. And you're right. I agree with you. I do think it will, that would have helped. On the other hand, sometimes you can't even see. Sometimes I'll say to patients, let me hold the hope for you. You can't see it right now or feel it right now, but I know it's going to get better. And with help, everyone can get better. So I'm going to hold that for you while you're in this moment, which seems so endless and so hard, and that you'll never sleep again. And it will pass, but you can't know that right now. And even if it's a second kid, it's going to happen again. But at least you'll know, and you'll see that first kid and be like, I know it's going to be okay at some point. You know, when you're trying to do it a little differently so that you, you know, we try and improve upon it the second time, or I mean, who knows? But it's in the moment, boy, it is so overwhelming and so hard.
Are you concerned that some of the things that we are dealing with now in this, again, global pandemic and very weird time, especially in New York City, that there might be lasting effects? So like some of the traumas that some parents are going through now, especially moms, might rear their ugly heads later on. So the trauma of not having your spouse in the hospital with you when you deliver, or not having your parents come meet the baby before, you know, say 6 or 8 weeks, or not having had help in the home when you really needed that support. Or one of the things that was most helpful to me was my new mom support group down here. I'm a member of the local downtown moms group in the Tribeca area. And they were phenomenal. Every week for 5 or 6 weeks, I met with these women while I figured this out. And we all are still friends. And we just bared our souls for 2 hours every Friday. And it was truly one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. Because through them, I realized this is normal. You're going to get through this. Your baby's not abnormal. Like they helped me see the normalcy in all of it. But moms now are doing it virtually. You're not in someone's face.
And what's the choice right now? That's the choice. Look, we at the Motherhood Center, part of what was beautiful about it was this space, this community, and we got to make it beautiful, and it feels very urban zen, and you come in and people feel like they just breathe a deep sigh of like relief, and like it just feels like I'm being taken care of here. People have described it as like a womb, and you can imagine. We were like, how are we going to go virtual when a lot of the program and the therapy that we can provide has to do with, you know, seeing someone with their baby and having a nursery on site where we take care of the baby while the mom is, you know, to give the mom a break. And, you know, and so we really thought, are we going to be able to do this? But you know what? What was the option? To not treat people? Forget it. People are not any less sick and still need help. And even though initially, you had asked this before, initially the calls were down and patients and people were frozen. There was a fight or flight. We were in freeze mode and we were unable, I think as a whole, to do anything other than start to understand that there was a global pandemic happening and that people were dying. And that hospitals went all COVID, you know, everything went towards resourcing hospitals, and everybody else had to stay out to allow for the streets to be open and supplies to be, you know, needed to be available only to those most sick. So we went underground, like everything. There was an article in the New York Times that I keep quoting that was entitled, "Where Have All the Heart Attacks Gone?" Like regular illnesses and horrible things were still happening, but we didn't deal with them for a good month. And I think we're only starting to deal with them now at, you know, week 8, 10, 12, because the curve has flattened, which really only means hospitals are no longer overwhelmed. We've gotten to the point where if, God forbid, you need the hospital and a ventilator, you can hopefully get it, right? But we're not done with this. And I think that there's going to be a lot of trauma because of that, because so much was missed, so much was withheld or suppressed. You know, now they're saying sort of we're in a suppression state, but before it was more just like, it was, unless you had a coronavirus or a COVID problem, you didn't exist, right? That all eyes on that. And you know what? That's how it had to be. And that was super scary because, you know what? There are many illnesses out there that were out there that were still occurring, including perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So it all got pushed to the side. So I think there's going to be a big reckoning as we start to find a new normal, and we have to deal with what was over these last couple few months. Like, what happened? And what did we endure during this time, in addition to the kind of global grief and loss that was experienced? I mean, collectively, what was it for us? Like, what was it like for us personally? What things didn't go the way they thought they would? You know, what things did we have to endure that really were traumatic?
I'll ask you this last question because I think this is a great place to end it. We keep saying that it's Maternal Health Awareness Month. What are some things that those of us who either are not parents but have friends who are parents or sisters who are parents or who are out of the trying time of, say, the first couple years, what can we do? How can we support those moms and indeed dads who may be suffering as well? What can we do for them? What questions can we ask? How can we try to get through to them?
Well, I'll never forget, you know, as a medical student and as a rep, you know, trying to memorize all the signs and symptoms of everything. And how do you do an exam, both a physical exam and the interview? And really, at the end of the day, for doctors and everybody else alike, if you forget everything else, what you really have to do, if you can, is look someone in the eye, hold their gaze, and ask them how they are. How are you? And don't move, and it will be a little socially awkward, but you look someone in the eye and you pause after you've said, how are you? Because you mean it. When you ask that question, you mean it, and you want to hear what they have to say. You're going to listen. And honestly, that's it. Like, it's not, you can know everything about everything, but if you can't look someone in the eye and ask them how they are and have the patience and the openness and the non-judgmental stance to listen, you're never going to know. And when you do that, often with women after they've had babies, they often start tearing up. I mean, you may recall that Meghan Markle interview that was done that was really spontaneous, wasn't meant to go that way, right? But the interviewer kind of was really serious when he said to her, you know, how are you? And she choked up and the world went crazy, right? Because here we have this princess who is not perfect, who was struggling and who dared to admit that, inadvertently, mind you. But that was beautiful. And I remember talking to people about that because that's for real. And choking up, feeling tearful, having someone listen. Again, it doesn't mean you have a disorder. It does not mean you're not a good mother. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means this is hard and talking about it helps. And listening for those who don't know what to do, and even for those who do know what to do, listening and hearing and really empathizing with that new mom and just saying, like, I hear you. It is, sounds so hard. I can't imagine what it's like to be in that position, but I love you. I hear you. What can I do to help? What can we do together? You know, it's and then it's helping someone get the help they need, right? Often women can't do it for themselves. So it's just, if you can identify it, you're way ahead of the game because you can move towards finding them treatment. And again, you don't have to know everything. You don't have to know where it is. You can certainly call us at the Motherhood Center because we have a lot of people who call and say, I don't even know what I'm calling about, but can I just explain what I see or what's happening? And we are so happy to talk about it because people don't know what's happening. And again, you don't have to know. You just have to be there for that person, whoever it is. Notice if someone's off and say to them, like, are you okay? Like, I'm noticing that you haven't been yourself. Everything all right? but not in that like so that like way you might say it in a New York elevator, like, hey, how you doing?
No, wait for the answer. Yeah.
Wait for the answer. And make sure it's a moment that they have the opportunity to actually share. And again, not everyone's gonna share, not everyone's gonna tear up, choke up, whatever. You know, but you asked, and that means a lot to a mom.
Catherine, your patients are so lucky to have you, and we are so grateful for your wisdom. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
my
this.
Pleasure.
This is All Good in the Motherhood with Teresa Priolo, part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. This episode was recorded, edited, mixed, made awesome by Matt Onimus. The executive producers are myself, Matt Onimus, and Imad Ashgar. Byron Harmon is VP of News, and our vice president and general manager of Fox 5 is Lou Leone. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to say hi, reach out to me on Twitter at Fox5Teresa or on Facebook, Teresa Priolo NY. And stay tuned for our next episode.